to tell you that, excuse me, my mother and father were engaged in Sweden in 1910. In fact, this is her engagement ring, and it says that they were engaged February 10th, 1910. And she came to Omaha, and they were married in 1912. He was a plasterer. He went to school and learned to be a plasterer, and he was specialized in cornice work. And so consequently, he and his brothers always went on big, big jobs where they had like courthouses and so forth, where they had fancy plastering around the ceilings and so forth, and that's the kind of work he did. But I wanted to tell you about one time he and his brother drove down to Abilene, Texas, and he wrote my mother and I a letter on January 16th, 1930. And I don't know what kind of a car they had, but the letter is so interesting, and I'm going to give you a copy of it, because he starts out, "Dear Svea and Mama, just a few lines about two plasterers' journey to the sunny Texas, where you sit in front of a stove and fry your front and freeze the marrow in your backbone." And he said, "We started out Monday noon and should have been here Wednesday, but we did not get here until Friday night on account of the bad weather." But I could go on. I don't think you want me to read it all.
Okay, we take part of it anyway, so we know.
But it's yes. First day we got to Salina, Kansas, about 350 miles. Not bad for the start. It was cold and it started to snow. The next day it was snowing harder and the wind was blowing hard and it was getting colder right along. The driving was not bad, but we had to stop and warm up and get something hot to drink. We covered about 350 miles that day. The speedometer got on the bum, so we could not check up on the distance. We stopped in El Reno, Oklahoma overnight. We were about froze stiff when we got there. It took us all night to get thawed out. The next morning, it was Wednesday, colder and still snowing, about 6 inches of snow on the ground. We started out 10 o'clock, got along fine until we got across the Texas line, when it turned into rain and sleet that froze on the road and the windshield, so we had to get out of the car and scrape the ice off every few miles. And there was no more snow on the road, but we were all right as long as we had gravel road. No paving in those days. But say, when we had hit the pavement, it was nothing but ice and slippery and kind of round. We had figured to make Fort Worth, but we gave that up. It was getting dark and the road was getting worse, so we decided to stop in the next fair-sized town. Coming through a small place, we saw lots of lights down in the valley, so we thought there must be trouble down there. We found out in the oil station there was a truck in the ditch and a bus across the road. So I think we were lucky that we did not go down there, or we would have never got back again. We went back to the only hotel in this small place and got a room. And there again, we were lucky. It was not more than 1 hour, and the hotel was chock full of people and cars that could not go any farther. I don't know how all managed to sleep and keep warm in this old shack that had only a few gas heaters. The wind and the cold blowing right through it, like it was built out of a wire fence. We had a small heater in the room, but that was not enough to melt the ice in the pail on the floor. Very seldom anybody stopped in this place, so they had let everything freeze up. It was only 14 miles to the next town. Well, we got through the night, and the next morning it had stopped snowing. But it sure was cold, and the road no better, if not worse. Everybody was waiting for someone to start out. Some of them were going to take country roads, thinking it would be better. Well, we could not stay here, so Al and I started out. We did not have any chains, and that would not have been any good, for the road was slicker and harder than a greased billiard ball. It was just like glass. I have not seen anything like it in all my life and could not hardly stand up on the road. Well, we got going, or crawling. We had not gone very far before we saw what had happened last night. There were cars and trucks, oil tanks, and great big moving vans in the ditch. Cars of all makes that had skidded or just slid off the highway. But I don't think there was very many people hurt because everybody had been going slow and careful. The 100 miles we drove that day, we saw at least 35 or 40 cars on the side of the road, some of them badly smashed up, but most of them had just slid off and could not get out. We stopped and helped to pull out many of them. We turned around once, but we never got off the road because of Albert's careful driving. It was worse going downhill. I could not use the brakes. The minute you put the brakes on, you were gone. That was where most of the drivers made the mistake. We could see them in front of us going too fast on level ground, and where they got to a hill down, they stepped on the brakes, and that was the end of their journey for that day. They would spin around a couple of times and then the ditch for them. If we could stop and help, we did. And if we could not, we just kept going. We stopped once to help a poor fellow with his family in an old Ford, and we could not get started ourselves. We had to back down the hill about a half mile to get a good start. We had to do that twice before we made it. It was risky business, I tell you. Well, we got to Fort Worth and kept on going until dark and got to a town named Mineral Wells, stayed here overnight, and we almost made up our minds to leave the car and take the train the rest of the way. It was only 125 miles to go. But the next morning, it was not quite so cold and a little snow on the road, so we got a pair of chains and started out and got here at 3:30 Friday night, 2 weeks too soon. That was the worst of it. That's the end of a perfect day. Much love and kisses from Daddy.
Can you? So this is Mrs. Svea Ford in Omaha, Nebraska. She read a letter from her father sent in 1930 back to his wife in Omaha, right. Nebraska. And Mrs. Ford was born 1914, April 16, in Omaha. And it's today, July 26, 1985.
Right.
So this Al, now you're talking about in the letter here, were you reading, was he also his?
Albert.
Albert.
That was my uncle.
Well, that was your uncle.
Uh-huh.
It's a very well-written letter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It is a beautifully...
He came over in 1912. My father was a reader. He read all the time.
So your father, now, he was Mr.
Andrew.
Anders.
Yeah, Anders. That says Anders inside of this ring. Anders. Oh, yes. Right. No, his father did. His father changed it to Rain. Yes, yes.
And it was spelled
R-E-H-N.
R-E-H-N.
Uh-huh. Rain.
Mm-hmm. Rain, huh.
Here's a copy of this letter. So you can have it.
Was he a soldier and his father, you think?
Pardon me?
Your grandfather, now, was he a soldier in Sweden? Mm-hmm.
My grandfather?
Yeah, as he, because he changed his name to Reed?
I don't know, but he came over to America. I met him. He lived with us for a while.
Oh, did he emigrate too, or?
Yes.
He did?
Mm-hmm. He came over and then he died
both
here.
Both grandparents?
No, just the grandfather.
Father.
Mm-hmm. My grandmother died of tuberculosis in Sweden. Mm-hmm. On my father's side.
Was your father the only child in the family, or?
No, there were four brothers. Yeah, I have the picture here. It's a handsome family.
So they were engaged in Sweden.
This yes. Is, my father's the tallest one.
Albert Rehn, Andrew Rehn,
and Carl Rehn.
Four brothers.
Mm-hmm.
No sisters.
No. Well, they had a sister in Sweden, Marie.
But she stayed there.
Yes. And I went to visit her. I was going to visit her. We could not get her, locate her at all. And then the second time when we went back, then we finally got the correct address and everything, and she had died just the year before.
Oh.
So we just missed her.
So did they all emigrate, the whole family then?
The brothers did,
all
and the father.
So what did they settle, not like Albert did?
Here in Omaha. And John was here in Omaha. And Carl Rehn landed in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. And they were all, the three oldest were in the plastering business, contracting and so forth. And then Uncle John was in marble, worked on marble.
How come they chose that kind of line of work?
Well, they all took up a trade. They all
became in Sweden?
No, here.
Here.
He came here and he went to school, and he saved money, and then he sent for my mother. It took him 2 years, and then he brought her over in 1912, and then I was born in 14. And Mama, when she came over here, then they rented a boarding house, and she ran a boarding house.
And
I, yes, and I said, Mama, how did you do it? She couldn't speak English. I said, when you went to a grocery store, what did you do? She said, I just pointed at things. And she washed the sheets on, look at how many borders she had, and she washed the sheets on the board. Yeah, how the hard they worked. Here's how they looked when they got married.
Where's this house located?
23rd and Cummings. That's where I was born.
23rd and Cummings.
That's where I was born. This is how they looked when they were married. The cute couple.
And your mother, she was born in Kavakangas.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and she met my father. My mother started school when she was 7. You know, they don't start till they're 7. And then she had to quit when she was 9 years old and go out and work because there were 9 children in the family and they had no way to support them. So she was a piga, you know. She took care of children. And she worked for this couple where the woman had a crippled arm so that she couldn't take care of the children. So my mother did. And she was only 9 years old. And she'd start playing with the children. And then the woman would say, when my husband comes home, I'm going to have him give you a licking because you played with the children. Isn't that something? Well, evidently, she got tired of that. And when she was 16, she went down to Söderhamn, and she was a maid or a waitress in the hotel down there. And she's the shortest one. And she wrote on there, and it says, Shannon du Olme, she says, to her sister. She sent that card to her sister. Do you recognize me? She says.
She has a very nice handwriting.
Yeah. Oh, and my mother spoke Finnish. They spoke Finnish in the home. See, they were, Kuvikangas is right on the Tornio, on the river, which separates Finland and Sweden. So they went to Swedish school, but they spoke Finnish in the home. There she is. My mother's real cute.
She was a doll. She was the peppiest person I ever met.
So how long did she work then as a piga in the Söderhamn before she met your father?
No, that was up in, I suppose, in Haparanda.
They met?
No, they met in Söderhamn. And
the
mama was a waitress in the hotel. And, she was evidently, she went there when she was 16. And then she didn't come to America till she was about 21. So she worked there all that time. That's where she met my dad. This is something interesting. I have to tell you about my mother. My mother was the only child out of 9 children that got married and had a child. I'm the only grandchild.
On 9 children?
So consequently, I've inherited twice from Sweden because I'm the only heir. Isn't that something?
That is really something.
So
they didn't marry then the rest of the sisters?
Only one got married, and the others, there was 3 boys, Paul and, I don't remember, Levy and what's the other? Anyway, they came to the United States, but they never got married. One was killed in a riot in California. Another one had appendicitis attack and died. And then we never heard from the older brother whatever happened to him. But then I met my Aunt Emma and Aunt Mina in Sweden. And I have to tell you about Aunt Mina because she paid for my mother made a trip over there in 1954 and Aunt Mina paid for her trip. And she was famous in Sweden. She's a good looking gal. But she worked for the Fröken Mina Perävaara. Now she went by the Finnish name, Perävaara, which is means mountain, the same as berg in Sweden, Swedish, which means mountain. Berg is mountain. So she always went by the name of Perävaara. But she was worked for the Kungliga Sveas Engineer Corps Officers Mess, and she's received all these medals from the king.
Why did she use the Finnish name?
Because they spoke Finnish in the home. They used the Finnish. She used the Finnish name. Here she is wearing her medals.
Till minne av tioårigt arbete för officersmässan. It was in Boden then?
Stockholm.
Oh, Stockholm?
Yes, they were Royal Svea Engineer Corps, who she worked for. And she had that job about 25 years. So she's gotten all those medals from the king. But look at this. This is the guest at one of her parties. And look at this.
Mina Perävaara. So she got all those
medals. That was Aunt Mina. And when she died, she left me her home. And everything in it.
You were the only survivor that Perävaara ran.
She was very famous. Look at here. Fröken Wilhelmina Perävaara. This is on her 60th birthday. They had a party. And they even made up a poem about her. Look at that. But she's cute. My mother looked just like her. Look at here. Isn't she a good looking woman? But she had her face lifted.
What generation is this?
I don't know. Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that's very nice. So there was like an address they gave her then.
Oh yeah, it's a fancy party. Well, they thought a lot of her.
All officers.
Yeah, that was in Stockholm. Oh, this is my grandfather's or grandmother's. Yeah.
And this is her death.
No, that's my grandmother, Mama's mother, Maria.
Oh, I see. Well, and she also used the name Perävaara.
Mm-hmm.
Över Tornio kyrka. 1938. And they were sent here to Omaha.
Yes. Well,
I
went through her things, I took Mama had one, but I probably have it at home, but that happened to be.
If you can read Swedish, this is the way it is on the 60th birthday for.
And you said that my father had good writing. Well, he collected poems and then he would write those poems. But I think this is also interesting. Did you see her medals?
Did he like to write? Did he write anything on his own?
I don't know.
No diary or book of English on the route, Minnesota.
See, that's in a frame. I took it out of the frame this morning. It has to be cleaned up.
Carl Rehn, who was he? There was the brother?
Oldest brother. Mm-hmm.
On 80th North 17th Street.
Mm-hmm. Here's that letter. You can have that letter. But I have so many. I have so many things at home. And
so did they tell you much about their lives in Sweden, your mother and father?
No, not really. And I'm just like everybody else, and I didn't ask. Except Mama told me about how hard she had to work.
So you have found out after then you visited Sweden what they actually did and what they wanted and so forth. And then you received all those medals from as being the sole survivor of her site.
And also her home and everything in it. So of course there was no way I could bring furniture.
Was
I
they wish up in the Kalvakangas then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I wish I could have brought her some furniture, but I couldn't. It's too hard to pack that up. But I did bring her dishes and things back. Mm-hmm. And Mama's cousin lives in the house where my mother was born. And he took my things to the railroad station so that it could be shipped by railroad car to Oslo. And then we took a ship from Oslo home at first day of October. And that's the ship that Edla Warner was on. And he said, Nemesvea, vad har du gjort? Har du plockat stenar? because everything was so heavy. I had all these dishes packed in these suitcases and things, you know, and linens and everything. But
who did you talk to then when you came over there to collect all these inheritances?
Oh, Sirley, Sigvard Sirley, who lives in Haparanda, and he was the one that executor of the will.
Was he able to speak in English to you then?
Oh yes, he speaks English. And he's a toll man. He was a toll master in Haparanda, and we stayed at his home. And you should see his home and talk about antiques and everything. Mama said, if they couldn't pay the toll, he probably says, "Okay, I'll take this then, or I'll take that."
Big household.
Yeah.
So, did you feel anything different when you came back there in your father's and your mother's childhood home?
It's you can't believe what a feeling you have to know. And then my mother and I would walk to the Granner, you know. We were invited to lunch, you know, to these different houses that she grew up with. And the man across the street, she grew up with him, and he came over every day and brought us kindling wood or chopped wood for us, because we cooked in her cook stove, you see. After Aunt Mina went to, second time we went back to Sweden, my mother and I, the first time we went, my mother, daughter, and I went in 1962. Then Mama said she wanted to go back once more. In the meantime, Aunt Mina had been put into a home in Irvetonio. So we had the run of the house. We stayed in her house and went to the store and cooked, and we were there for 2 months. And the first time we went, well, we were gone 3 months, but we always had a place to stay so that we didn't, it wasn't, you know, so expensive. But we went to visit Aunt Mina in the home, and she was so stuck up, she wouldn't speak to the other residents there. She said, "Jag har levat med fina folk I Stockholm." She didn't want to talk to these other people. She was so stuck up.
So she felt degraded and...
Yeah. She had, with the Royal Svea Engineer Corps, where she had lived for 25 years and so.
So she had a bad experience on the last days. Yeah. How old was she then? About,
she was about 85 when she died.
Is this the one here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your mother, was there something special she looked for when she came back after the years over here?
No. The first time she went back in 54, she hadn't been home for 45 years. And so she went home, she had to go home and see her sisters. Well, then she said, "I have to bring my daughter." She was so proud of me. "I have to bring my daughter over here." So then Mama, Barbara, and I went in 62. And then I was lucky enough to go back again in 69. And we were so fortunate because I've crossed the ocean 3 times by ship, which is the most wonderful experience of all. We went on the Kungsholm, the Gripsholm, and the Sagafjord. And I was going to tell you, when Edla was with us, and we left Oslo, Norway on the 1st of October, which was a poor time to cross the ocean because of the storms. And Edla and I had such good times together. And one day the sea was very rough, and Mama had sense enough to stay in bed, but she and I, we were sitting in chairs just like this. We were visiting with her before we were going to go into lunch. All of a sudden, I don't know what the ship hit, some wave or something. We went backwards in our chairs, and Mama said, "I wonder what happened to you girls." She was looking, and we were both gone. We were both in the corner of the room. That's how we hit a big wave or something. So I guess some woman started walking down the stairs, and she flew all the way down the steps. It was quite an experience.
It didn't bother Edla Warner, though, being an old Navy nurse.
No, we had so much fun. Oh, she and I laughed and laughed.
Did you not seasick either?
No, none of us got seasick. Mama never got seasick, and she traveled, I bet she went across the ocean 6 times. She never got seasick.
So she wanted to return then for visits?
Yes.
What did she say after returning again? She didn't want to stay in Sweden.
Oh no, she didn't want to stay.
She had a family
no.
here.
But she wanted to come here. And however, she was very lonesome, because when she left home, when she was 16, she never went back again to her hometown. So she never said goodbye to her mother, because she said, "Well, I didn't know she was going to go so far." And anyway, she and my Uncle John came over together on the ship, and in 1912. That's my brother, my father's youngest brother. And they traveled together. And of course, when you came to Ellis Island, you were supposed to have, I think, $60. And Mama had $60, but he didn't have it. But when they went through the line, she showed hers, and then she handed it back to him, and then he showed the same money. And then when they, in New York, they got on the train to come here to Omaha, and they bought a box lunch, and there had a banana in it. They never had seen a banana in their life. They threw that away. They didn't know what that was.
There were no problems at Ellis Island that she recalled or anything. They went through without any problems.
Yes,
no.
Right.
Hitches. And she was alone then on this trip?
She was with Uncle John.
With Uncle John.
Mm-hmm. And he was young, you know, just a young man.
So then coming to Omaha.
And then she came to Blair, Nebraska. Can you believe that in 1912 that little town was there?
Danish.
Okay. But she met Ada Eliason on the boat, and they were forever friends. And Ada had a sister in Blair, so she said, you come with me, because after all, she was only engaged to my father, so she had no place to go, you see, and until they were married. And then she came to Omaha, and then they started running the boarding house.
So they was very well restricted at that time. If you were engaged, you were not supposed to stay overnight.
Oh, heavens no.
Mm-mm. There was an unwritten rule.
No. And the church they went to was the Swedish Salvation Army Church.
In Omaha?
In Omaha. Yes, I've been to it many times. And
So they didn't join the Lutherans or the Covenants? Or the...
Not then, at that time. They were married in the Lutheran Church, Trinity Lutheran Church, excuse me. And I was baptized in that church, and I still go to that church. Isn't that something? However, when I first got married, we lived in Hastings, Nebraska for 4 years. And I did live in Minneapolis 2 years when I was a little girl. But otherwise, I've always gone to Trinity Lutheran Church. Can you believe that?
Was that a church that Wilbur Palmquist was
at? Yes, yes.
Oh, yes. Did you really? Oh, yeah, I thought the world began.
He is dead now, you know.
Yeah, he died
yes.
a year ago.
Yeah. And then Reverend Bernard.
I was the last person from
Trinity
to visit him.
Oh, I see.
Oh. We're going to have an anniversary this fall, so they'll
70th.
The ministers that are left are coming.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Now, he was there many years.
Oh, I'm through.
So, they had this boarding house. Did they buy there on time then? How did they manage your father? Had he scraped money together and to be able to run the boarding house, or how?
Mama ran it, I guess, while he was going to school and trying to learn his trade. Of course, he helped her, you know, but in the evenings.
She was the cook then?
She was the cook, and how she did it, I don't know.
And how old?
She was about 21.
21. So she was not afraid then to take charge?
No. And 2 years later, I was born, and she said, I slept all day and cried all night. And so how in the world she got her work done, I don't know. But she had all these Swedes that were her boarders.
So they were strictly the pictures. Swedish boarding office.
Oh, evident. Absolutely.
She had no trouble with the language other than
no,
going shopping, though. Then
right.
She had to point out.
Right.
23rd and coming.
23rd and coming.
And that's where I was born.
So how long did she keep on doing this kind of work?
Well, when...
Do you remember growing up?
No, then they moved. They bought a house, some land on 39th and Curtis Avenue, mm-hmm. and a two-room house. And then we lived in
that house where your mother lived now, was it?
Yes. It was a two-room house, and then they had a friend named Charles Forslund, who was an architect, you know, and he drew up plans and he enlarged the house. But the living room and dining room there are their original two rooms.
Look at that little
house
on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently your father did pretty good then in the plastering business, being able
yes.
to buy a house then. That was in 1918, 17?
Yes, that was about the time, about maybe 16. By the way, I did have a brother, Gunner. but he died in the flu when he was 3 years
the
old.
Spanish influenza.
Mm-hmm. When he was only 3 years old. He was born in 16 and he was 3 years old, so he died in 19. And my mother said that my father was so sick that he couldn't even go to the funeral. In fact, the doctor didn't know if he was going to save him.
This is Side 2, this continuation with Mrs. Poor, Omaha, Nebraska.
July 26, 1985. So, do you remember, were you sick during that epidemic?
No, I wasn't sick.
It didn't affect you a thing?
No, it didn't.
How about the rest of your playmates? Were they...
No, I don't think so. But my brother, he got it, and my father, and I suppose my father brought it home, and then my little brother got it and died.
So he had much of it too, then, the flu, perhaps? Your father?
Oh, yes. Very serious. Very seriously ill. And it was more or less like pneumonia, you see. And then he had pneumonia again 20 years later. And then another 20 years, excuse me, went by, and he died of pneumonia the third time that he got it. Just before, when he was only about 52 years old, and it was just before they discovered sulfa, which they treated pneumonia with.
What year did he die?
About 52.
52.
Mm-hmm. No, wait a minute. No, he was 52 years old, and he died in 37.
Uh-huh.
37,
right.
Right. He died in 37. In fact, my son was only 6 weeks old when he died, and I feel so bad because my father was a handyman. He could do anything, and I feel as though my son is just like him, exactly like him, and they would have been real good pals. So as it turned out, I'm the one that was the pal to my father. I'm the one that I can hit a nail with a hammer, and I kind of followed my father around. And I like to read. I'm just like my father, exactly. I read all the time.
But you couldn't help him with the plastering business, though, eh?
No.
He had to be his own line. So how was the business now for him?
He was his own contractor?
Then?
He worked for his brother, Carl. Carl Wren. He was
the
contractor. And then Uncle Albert and my dad worked for Carl Wren. Carl was the big shot. He was the oldest. And so he was the contractor. And he's the one that went around the country and got the jobs.
So and there was all kind of plastering, small houses, big houses, hospitals, and...
And buildings.
And big buildings. Outside?
Like the courthouse. No, inside.
Inside.
Like the courthouse. Courthouses around it, all over the countries.
Was it good in the 20s?
It was real good at that time. But I do remember then, later, in the 30s, you know, the 30s, then, of course, then I remember that there was no work, especially in the winter. And my mother got a job, and she was worked in Sherman Edholm Laundry, and she was a collar girl, and she was so proud that she was a collar girl, that she fixed the collars on the shirt. She knew how to run this machine.
Well, there was a special...
Yeah.
Incentive to work more pay, perhaps, or
right, right.
Oh, I see. And that's all she did.
Right.
So that's
the colors are separate then.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Was there a necessity for her then to seek work because?
Oh yes, of course.
No work to be had.
Right.
How long did they last? Last here in Omaha, the depression in the building.
Well,
36.
We were married in 36 and there still was depression because my husband was only making $14 a week when we got married. And we lived on that. We had an apartment and everything on $14 a week.
So there was tough times then.
Right, it surely was.
Yes. And your father now, did he continue with his brothers then in the same business?
Yes.
He died, you said, in 37.
Right. And this letter that I read, he had a terrible accident when he was down there. He was electrocuted.
In Texas?
Yes. It was such a coincidence. My mother liked to go to fortune tellers. She went to this fortune teller, this Mrs. Thompson, And Mrs. Thompson told her, she said, your husband is gone. And of course, Mama said yes. And she said, he will come home in a box. So my mother worried herself sick about that. And sure enough, he was electrocuted when he was down there. He grabbed hold of a bare wire. And he yelled, and he had a Negro hod carrier. This man was a hod carrier, a Negro man, and he yelled at him, turn off the switch, turn off the switch, which he did. And he was in the hospital, but he recovered. Can you believe that?
So he was actually working on it in Texas,
right?
His brother Albert.
Yeah. See, what did he say? They had to wait 2 weeks or 3 weeks before they started.
So how long did they stay down there?
Well, I think it was all summer.
Mm-hmm. So there was a slack in the work here then in this
right.
area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they thought Texas was the paradise.
Well, they got that job down there. They sure did.
Summer and good roads.
Yeah, he went all over to work. I remember he was in. He went to work in Washington, the state of Washington, Bellingham, Washington, on a job, and he wrote home and he said. That was as close to Sweden as he'd ever seen. It was so beautiful there.
So maybe he wrote to your mother and said, you don't want to move out there?
No. See, these jobs only lasted like 3 months or 6 months.
So he didn't expect to
No.
To stay on.
The only time we moved was when, in 1927 and 28, we moved to Minneapolis, and we were there 2 years. He was on a job up there. And. I remember it so well because I was so happy because I was with my cousins and had a wonderful time when I lived there, and I was confirmed up there at Nokomis Lutheran Church, and that's why I wasn't confirmed at Trinity. And
you said that they went to the Salvation Army to start off with
right.
when they came.
Mm-hmm.
They headed down
because it was Swedish.
Yeah, but the Lutheran Church was Swedish also, wasn't it?
I suppose. But they went to and they had Ulotta. I remember going to Ulotta. And this was off of Leavenworth Street here in Omaha. I remember going there many times.
But then they joined the Lutherans after.
Right.
So how about Swedish organizations now, like the Vikings or
Vikings? Yes. Mama belonged to Astrid Lodge, Ladies of Vikings. And my father belonged to Helga Lodge, which was a men's organization previous to this Aurora Ode, and then they broke up, and then it's...
Oh, I see. So he belonged then from there?
Yes.
When he came here. And there was a hospital insurance policy to start mm-hmm. with too in the...
Right. But guess how much it was? $100. $100 was the limit on it. That's what you would get if you... burial fund. $100.
It was the reason to belong to it,
right.
to cover your
sure.
burial expenses.
I didn't know I had this
and
thing.
There were a lot of Swedes then in Omaha, so they all...
gathered together,
yes.
of course.
Did they talk Swedish often?
All the time. In fact, my mother and father spoke nothing but Swedish in the home. I couldn't speak English when I started school. Absolutely nothing. And in fact, there was a little colony of Swedish people in our area. Vivian and Roy Carlson and Clara and her husband, her brother. And we all started Belvedere School and couldn't speak English. I don't know what the teacher did. And then there was also a little colony of Italians, and they're still there. And they spoke Italian, and we spoke Swedish.
So there was two nationalities right there.
Right.
It didn't take you long though to pick up the English. How did you? Do you remember no. it was a hard time for you? Did you felt embarrassed?
I don't remember that at all. Isn't that something? But when I was in Sweden, they said, "You talk such good Swedish." They thought I was born there, and I said, "Well, I just owe it all to my mother and father."
Uh-huh. So there was later on in life you had no problems to change over from one to another. In other words,
no.
it didn't bother you. Anything.
In fact. To this day, we keep up with our Swedish friends, and we talk Swedish to each other on the telephone and so forth. We say, ska du köra din fina bil, ska jag köra min. Och hon har en liten hund hemma, och hennes hund väntar och väntar och tittar på fönster och väntar för henne att komma hem, och han tittar på klockan. gör han inte.
Jag har en liten hund hemma som sitter och tittar på klockan.
Sitter och tittar och tittar på klockan.
Så ni räknar med att åka tillbaka till Sverige igen och kanske på besök?
Och jag önskar att jag kunde gå tillbaka. Ja.
Nästa
år. Mm-hmm. När min mor var i Sverige, hon sa vi måste säva mycket pengar till kommer till Sverige. Och jag sa, mamma, inte säva, det sparar mycket pengar. Och så hon sa, du vet svenska bättre än jag. Men I was so proud of her because she started school when she was 7 and had to quit when she was 9. Yet she spoke 3 languages fluently.
Also Finnish?
Finnish, absolutely. Finnish and Swedish and English. And got along very well.
There were no Finnish people here in Omaha, though?
No, not too many, no.
So she had hardly used for the Finnish then?
That's right. But it all came back to her when she went back to Sweden.
You mentioned the word now, säva.
Säva. Säva, mycket pengar.
What did she pick there up? Was there something?
Well, save money is English.
Yes.
And she tried to make Swedish out of it. So she says, säva, mycket pengar.
So the other Swedes spoke the same way then? And
sure.
Get into the blood of
right.
Using that kind of terms.
Right. Vi måste säva mycket pengar, she said, to come to Sverige. And I said, mamma, det är inte säva, det är spara. Spara mycket pengar.
Were there other words you used, expressions like staketet, spisen?
Yeah, let's see, can you remember?
You know, like fence, what did you call the fence? She used the Swedish or English version for it?
I can't remember.
How about in the cooking now, in the making cookies and baking? Did she teach you to how to bake?
Not really, no. Because she did everything, because I was an only child and I was going to school, so she gave me time to study.
So you were spoiled a little bit then, though.
Right, I think so. Because I was an only child. But
she was
very proud of me, though.
Oh.
And that's why she wanted me to go to Sweden. She wanted her sisters to meet me. And when I came there, they couldn't believe it. My daughter and I'm 5'7" and my daughter is 5'10". And my mother's was only 5'2", and her sisters were very short also. They were only around 5 foot or 5'2". When we came there, they looked at us and they said, "De är så lång." We were so tall, see. Which, because we took after my father. My father was 6'2".
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. So they were short people up there,
right.
Your relation.
In fact, when we were over in Sweden, we went over to Avasaksa Mountain in midsummer, and where all the Finns are, and they're very short. The Finnish men are short. But it was the most wonderful experience to go over there, and of course we were there for midsummer. The first time we went, we stayed 3 months, and Mama would. And then when we were in Stockholm, we stayed at Frelsing's Armén Hotel in Stockholm, which is a clean, reasonable priced hotel, and right in the middle of that shopping section. What do they call it? In Stockholm. Oh dear, I can't think of the name right now. But anyway, Mama said, "Herregud, sover dem alla? Sover dem inte?" She said, because they'd be up all night. Well, it was daylight, you see. Daylight till 1 o'clock in the morning, and then it'd get dark, and then it was light again at 2. So she said, "Herregud, sover dem aldrig?" Because they'd be tearing up and down the streets all night long.
But she was used to it when she was a young girl.
Oh, yeah.
Growing up in midnight Sweden's land.
Mm-hmm. Then Mama's cousin had 7 children, and Monica was the oldest, and so she visited with us a lot. And she said, you know, over here, she said, and she spoke English. They were very bashful about it, but they do speak English. And she said, we're taught that we should live with them. A boy before we get married, to be sure. And I said, oh no, we don't do that in the United States. And I told her not to, and I don't think she did.
Like festivals now, you mentioned Midsummer here. Did your parents care about any Midsummer festivals?
Oh, yes.
In Omaha?
Yes, see, they belonged to all these organizations, and we went down the Swedish auditorium every time they had Ole Skratholt or anybody that came from Sweden. Why, we went down there all the time to dances. My mother and father loved to dance, so we... And of course, we kids would, oh, we loved it because we would dance with each other and we'd slide down the banisters, you know, and we just grew up in the Swedish auditorium. We loved it.
So the festivals were good for you too then?
Oh, yeah.
Ole Skratholt.
Oh, yeah.
Or Nicolina.
Let's see. Oh, you was so sherry, Nicolina. Oh, Nicolina was so sherry, May. Sure.
So he came in then for several performances or just once?
Oh, several times.
Several times?
Oh, sure. And every time
he
came.
I mean, did he come in on a Friday and Saturday and Sunday, or was it?
No, I think it was just one particular day.
Well, probably
on a Saturday.
On a Saturday?
Yeah, probably.
They didn't have it on the Sunday when he came in?
I don't think so. I remember my mother talking about Billy Sunday. They were quite impressed with Billy Sunday, who was going around preaching.
But they separated between Billy Sunday and Ole Skratholt.
Oh, yes.
Two separate days.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Did they dance on Sunday, do you remember that, in the Swedish auditorium?
No.
They couldn't do that?
I don't think so.
It was considered as a religious day. Yeah?
Right. I don't think they did, no.
Were they religious, your parents? Like table prayer and...
Yes. Oh, yes.
They did? In Swedish?
Yes.
And you have to read it too sometimes, or did you all?
Every night when I go to bed, I say, Gud som haver barnens själsighet och mig som liten. Vart jag blir värre vänner, stommen ligger i Guds händer. Lyckan kommer, lyckan går, om Gud älskar, lyckan får. I say that every night of my life.
So mother taught you that when you were a little girl?
Oh, yes. And my mother always sang to me, when I remember when I was sick or didn't feel good, she always sang to me, Trikarika ingen vara. And so consequently, every time we hear it in church, we sing it, we cry because we think of our parents.
Sing at my husband's funeral.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they're going to sing at my funeral too.
Mine too.
Did she prefer the Swedish version then instead of the English version?
Oh, yes.
That was the one she had learned and
Oh, yes.
It was carried over also to you.
Right.
So you are... You have children of your own, you said. You married in 1937.
Right, 36. In 36,
yeah. And was there an English name, Paul?
Yes, my husband is English. Scotch-Irish English.
What did mother say then when you brought David in English, not the Swedish?
She didn't say anything, but my father didn't care much for him. In fact, one time he went... When George was going to come over, he went and took a plank and put it across the driveway so he couldn't drive in. Can you believe that?
So he was...
He was very particular who was going to get me.
He thought you could pick one from the Swedish auditorium.
Right. I'm sure of that.
Yeah, where did you meet him now?
I met him at a Danish picnic. And his best friend was Danish. And then this friend, Clara and I... We went, in those days you could go to a dance without any fellow, and nobody ever harmed you or anything, and we met these fellas.
And you could dance with anyone you wanted?
Well, of course.
No,
you went stag. And so he was there with his Danish friend, Earl Sorensen. In fact, there were four boys that always went everywhere together. So... they had an old Model T Ford, and they asked if they could take us home, because we had taken the streetcar out there. So we said yes, it was all right in those days. And so then I had them take me home first, and then Clara said, boy, you had your nerve here. I was left with four boys, and they took me home.
Okay,
yeah. And but then when they took her home, but they wanted to know her name and my name, and of course, Svea, what kind of a name is that? And he wrote it down and he said, I'm going to call sometime. But in the meantime, I went up to Minneapolis to visit my cousin Ingrid. And I was supposed to stay 2 weeks, but I had such a good time, I stayed 3 weeks. And I got a letter from Claire, and she said, that George is going to find somebody else if you don't hurry and come back. And that was the 4th of July that I met him. And 2 years later, we got married.
So soon? There's no wonder your father put up a big 2x4.
Yeah, and poor George, he had that old Model T Ford. In the wintertime, we wouldn't run, you know, and we were 11 blocks from the streetcar line, and he'd walk there, it'd be 10 below zero, he walked to come and see me.
What kind of work was he doing then? How old was he?
My husband.
Yes, when you married?
We were 21.
21.
And, well, he was 20 and I was 21. And he was, when I first met him, he was a stock boy at Omaha Crockery Company. But he did so well that they put him on the sales floor. And then eventually they gave him a territory out in Nebraska. So we moved out to Hastings, Nebraska, and we lived there for 4 years. And that was the best thing that ever happened to us, because then we were out on our own, you see, got away from our parents.
So it was hard for your father to see a different nationality coming in than the family?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. So he probably wanted you to look for maybe a minister's son.
No, I don't think so, but then probably wanted me to have a Scandinavian for sure.
So yeah, you had 2 children, you said?
Yes, I have a son and a daughter.
How did you bring those up now? Did you?
They were raised in the Lutheran Church and confirmed, and they both went to Dana College at Blair, which is a
Your
Danish.
Husband, was he also Lutheran when you married?
To begin with.
How about the culture? Upbringing, he was English and you were Swedish. Did the English prevail over the Swedish?
Yes, I'm afraid that his family prevailed over mine.
So they were had stronger influence on the children?
Right, uh-huh.
How about your mother now? Did she try to tell them any table prayers or?
Oh yes, and songs? Of course they, when my husband traveled, and then we would put up displays in different towns, and I would go with him. My mother always took care of my children. I never had to worry about them. She would just move right into my house and stay there with the children until I got back.
So they learned a few Swedish words.
Oh yes, you bet.
Maybe they did. The Finnish.
In fact, my son still talks about her Swedish pancakes that she made.
Uh-huh. So they remembered. How about the political field now? Your father, was he interested in that?
Mm-hmm. I was. Kind of.
I really don't know. All I know is that my father never became a citizen.
No.
But my mother did. My
she
mother
took out a citizen paper.
My mother, after my father died, my mother went to school, and she went to Tech High, and became a citizen, and she was very proud of that.
Was he against, he would never talk about it, in other words, your father then?
I think he was too busy traveling around, he was just too busy to do it.
So, but he was not politically involved with it?
No.
So you don't know
he never
was
voted then, did he?
Mm-mm.
And you don't know if he was Republican or Democrat?
No, I don't. And
what was your mother?
I think she was Democrat.
Democrat?
Mm-hmm.
How about newspapers in the home?
Oh yes, they took the Swedish newspaper.
Which one? Do you remember the name?
Augustana.
No. Mm-mm. Swedish newspaper, everybody took it.
Svenska Amerikanska Tribunen?
Yeah, right.
For Chicago?
Right. Uh-huh.
And they read that?
And I remember every Saturday night when my father came home, he had the Chicago Tribune with him. Because, like I say, he was a reader, and he had that, and he had, like, grapes for me, a bunch of grapes or something like that. He always had a treat for me.
Mm-hmm. So he read the Chicago Tribune?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he was a Republican then?
I don't know. I really don't know.
But he didn't vote. He probably didn't voice an opinion on it.
Mm-mm.
Well, I know what we were.
Oh. So how about now,
Did you take an interest in the Swedish paper, Svenska Mekaniska?
At that time, no.
No?
Mm-mm.
You never read it in the...
I remember looking at the funnies. You know, I used to read those funnies, but I didn't read the paper, no.
Did most of the Swedes have that paper, you think?
Oh, yes.
They did?
Oh, yes.
And there was the... Ed was Grattol then.
Yes, right.
I haven't heard of that for 100 years.
So you remember going to Olle Skrattel?
Oh, sure.
What did he actually do then on stage that was so funny that...
Well...
Did you laugh at him?
Oh, of course, of course. And he had this kind of red wig, you know, on, and he was always dressed so funny, you know. And he was told all kinds of jokes. I can't remember, but I know that we sure enjoyed going to see him.
So there was usually full house then when he came to town.
Right, right.
Do you remember how many traveled with him?
No, I don't, but I wonder who, somebody else was here in town. Was there a woman that went around and sang and...
His wife was with?
No. What no, this mean? Is separate entertainment of some kind. Who? Oh, Lapp-Lisa.
Lapp-Lisa. They're much later, though.
Yeah. Well, I remember going, and we would go and listen to Lapp-Lisa, too. She always came to town. And whenever she came, boy, we went.
That was in the 60s and the 70s.
Was it? Well, I don't know. I think it was earlier than that. I really do.
Oh, yes. Maybe it was 50s, mm-hmm. 60s.
Oh, yes. Because it was, well, when I was a little girl, she was here.
40s.
Sure.
Oh, I see. So she came after the war then.
Like Edgar Bergen, we always went to hear him.
Oh. So the Swedes, they had the entertainment then. In, where did they meet now? The Swedish Auditorium.
Swedish Auditorium on 16th and Chicago.
16th and Chicago.
And that's where the lodges all met too.
Oh. And they was owned jointly then by all the Swedish...
All Scandinavians. By the Scandinavians.
And what happened to that after they...
Well, eventually, just a few years ago, it was torn down. Progress. And Orver Ode and Astrid Lodge and Linnea Lodge, I don't know whether they bought this church or rented this church on, remember that?
Burt Street?
That was on Burt Street. Let's see, 34th and Burt Street.
Somewhere around in there.
Uh-huh, or 35th and Burt, and until they built this building that you were in last night. That's where they met. Be able to travel by ship. Do you know what we paid? It's hard to believe, but it only cost us $225 per person to cross the ocean for 10 days, fantastic board and room. Can you believe that?
Was that one way?
One way.
That was in the 50s?
Yes, and in 60s.
Well, yes, I can believe it.
Oh, I tell
it's
you.
It's been terrible in the last 10 years.
And so I just am so happy that I had this wonderful Swedish mother. And my father, of course, but he died so early, and I'm so sorry that he died, you know, when I was first married, because we would have had such good times together. But I'm so happy that my mother retained her friendship with her sisters, and so we went over there, and I got to go over there and loved it, just dearly loved it. Because it's so lovely over there and so clean and everything. And my daughter lives in Duluth, Minnesota, and she wouldn't move away from there for anything. I tried to get her to move to Omaha last year, and she wouldn't do it. Because she loves it, because it's just like Sweden, all the birch trees up there, and it's cold, but they don't mind it.
Do they have a feeling about the Swedish background?
Barbara does. My daughter certainly does, because she's been over there. And she remembers everything. And whenever somebody comes to town that needs a place to stay, she takes them in. Now, Saturday, she's going to have a young Finnish student over, and she's going to invite the she just got married for the second time to a Finnish man. And so she has just taken his family right in, you know. And they've taken her in with open arms. And when I just met them the first, when they were married the 1st of June, and when I went up to them and was introduced to them, I said, "Huva Päivä, Huva Päivä." And they were so surprised because they thought, "Oh, she can speak Finnish." But that's all I know. I just remember that from my mother. Every place she went, she said, "Huva Päivä."
What does that mean?
And that means, "Oh, my best to you," or "Greetings to you," or something like that.
So that comes back then?
Yes. And then, so Barbara's going to have this medical student.